You're listening to the Denver Real Estate Investing Podcast, where it's all about helping you grow your Denver real estate portfolio. Here's your host, Chris Lopez.
Good morning, everyone. Chris Lopez here, and today we are recording our monthly roundup for June of 2018. Now, this is actually a recording we're doing just over the phone because we were doing our usual live webinar where we have people join us, ask questions, hang out and have coffee, and then post it to the podcast channel afterwards. But we had some technical issues where the webinar platform with the internet was not working with us. So we got halfway through the webinar before it completely crashed and burned on us. So I apologize to people that were live on the webinar. But now Charles and I are on a conference call line over the phone to record this so we can make sure we get you the information for the month of June. So again, my name is Chris Lopez. I'm a realtor at Your Castle Real Estate. And I have Charles Roberts on the phone with me, who is a realtor, investor, and the president of Your Castle Real Estate. So Charles, good morning.
Good morning.
All right. And so just jumping into it, let's talk about the Denver monthly market snapshot. And we're just going to compare a couple of numbers from May of 2018 to May of 2017. So I'm going to read these off, and then Charles, you can pipe in with some input. So in May of 2017, there were 5,875 home sales. And this May, there was 5,620. So down 4%.
Right. So basically, that's just about the same. You know, up a little bit, down a little bit. So, you know, we had fewer home sales. What we're going to talk about in a moment is that we actually have some more listings. We have 7% more listings this year than last year, but we have 4% fewer sales. How does that happen? Most likely because some people are just, you know, shooting for the moon. They're pricing it way too high, thinking, well, maybe I can get it. So that would explain some stale listings where we do have more inventory because people are giving it a shot. But the number of sales is actually going down. And what we find is we still have more buyers than sellers, but there's not enough inventory to satisfy the number of buyers.
So we're not going to read off every single stat here because basically it's about the same it's been for a while now, right? Just low inventory, hot market, prices are going up, lots of buyers out there.
Yeah, the lesson here is that things don't change in a day or a week or a month in real estate. Even though everybody likes to think so and Zillow loves to publish new articles and blogs saying everything changed from last month, when you do this for years and years and years, you find that, no, things don't tend to change monthly. And once again, we're about where we were last month, and we're about where we were last year, and honestly, we're about where we were 5 years ago. We have not enough inventory to satisfy the demand, and we had a price increase of another 11% in the last year, which is extraordinary, except that we've been saying the word extraordinary too much for the last bunch of years because it's just become over and over again in a situation where you have more buyers and sellers, the prices went up. So the prices did go up and peaked in May of 18 at $487,000. That was the average home price. It was $440,000 in May of 17, up another 11%.
And that was just for homes, right, not condos and multi-units?
Yes, that was for single-family homes. So the fun question then, Chris, that we play around back and forth constantly is, what do you think when we're listening to this a year from now in May, June, July of 2019, what do you think the prices are going to do? Will they go up another 10 or 11%, do you think?
Well, honestly, I have no idea what they're going to do. But if you are going to make me take a guess here, I mean, I would have to guess that prices will keep going up. I don't know if it'll be the 10%, 11% range, but as you said and we've said hundreds of times now, it's kind of basic economics. There's way more demand than supply, therefore prices increases, and that's what I look at. And there's still just a lot of buyers out there of people wanting to, you know, buy homes, plus years and years of pent-up demand of lack of inventory. So even as interest rates probably go up some more, my guess is prices will probably still go up some more.
You know, the funny thing is I look back on what I was saying 3 years ago, 2 years ago, 1 year ago, and every time I said, nope, I don't think prices are going to go up 10% again. I think they'll go back to the average 5, 6, 7%. And I've been wrong the last 3 years in a row. So I'm asking myself the same question now, and I'm going to give the same answer that I've been wrong the last 3 years, I actually do think the prices might start to go back to long-term averages. You know, at this point, that's my best guess, knowing that I've been wrong the last 3 years because prices have continued to move up in the low double digits, more like 10 or 11%. But we'll see. Come back in a year.
So let me ask you this before we move on. I mean, just with the current data, that's been similar the last couple of years, does this change your investing strategy or what you're recommending to clients out there as far as what's happening in the market?
No, it definitely doesn't change it. What we have seen in the last year is that the prices have continued to move up and the rents haven't gone up as fast. So while we had a typical 7.2-7.5 cap rate for years, meaning the net operating income divided by the purchase price, we like to talk in cap rates, we really feel that that has been more into the mid-sixes. I was looking at a property early this morning, and it was, you know, about the best thing I could find for a decent property, and it was about a 6.6 cap rate, whereas I really feel a year ago and 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, it would have been more like a 7.2-7.4. So when you obsess over it like we do, that's a relatively big difference. If you're buying property for the long term, going to hold it for 10 or 15 years, it's not that big a deal. It's just depending upon your perspective. But, you know, it's the prices, the market is basically similar, but from the long-term buy and hold perspective, we're seeing the returns a little bit lower than they were the past couple of years because the rents haven't quite kept up with the price increases in the last year.
And so does it make any difference in your mind? Should people sit and wait to see what the market does for a couple of years to wait for prices to adjust? Or, I mean, what's your advice since returns are slightly less on a long-term buy and hold horizon?
Yeah, that's a great question. And my answer is what it always is. It's really dollar cost averaging. You know, the more you do this, the more humble you come in trying to predict markets. It's always someone who's read a book on real estate who thinks they know everything what's going to happen the next 5 years because they don't even know the questions to ask. They're not dumb, but they don't understand this. When you do this for a long time, what you realize is there's so many factors going into it, one has a very hard time predicting. So I just always go back to dollar cost averaging. That's why I'm not a flipper anymore. I'm not a short-termer. For me and for, you know, my heart rate, I needed to think long term. And just like in the stock market, I'm kind of a dollar cost averaging sort of long term player. I just feel the same thing here. No, I think it's crazy to like wait the next 2 years because that implies you know what's going to happen the next 2 years. If you actually do, then you should be playing the lottery and making $100 million. I mean, if you know what's going to happen the next 2 years, then of course you want to act on it. To the extent you don't know, then I would say you shouldn't, you know, buy today because you think today is the perfect day, or buy tomorrow, or buy in 700 days. You should probably have a long-term plan, and maybe as an investor, you buy a property a year for the next 5 years. You buy one every 3 years for the next 9 years or something like that. To me, that's what I see people who actually invest in real estate and actually make money do. They take measured business-like decisions like that. They don't try to predict the market. That's just, you know, I can't come up with a word insulting enough to say what I think that is. It's just not a good way to invest in real estate, I think.
All right, then. So moving on to our next section, we will talk about the monthly indicator, which sort of just pull an interesting fact or piece of data that's happened in the previous month. So a couple weeks ago, Lon Welsh of Your Cast Real Estate sent him an email from the Denver Business Journal. And the article is titled, Denver Renters Are Demanding and Want In-Unit Washers and Dryers. So Denver renters are described as demanding, and the one feature they want, in-room laundry, is the hardest to find. That's according to a new report from the Apartment List, which indicated that 65% of Denver renters are looking for units with washers and dryers, but only 26% of units have them. So Charles, I mean, you've been a long-term landlord here in Denver. What is your take on this very small piece of data?
You know, I think it's a very small piece of data that's maybe 47th on the list of things that I would think about. So it's fun. It's interesting, but it's not a material piece of data. I would say maybe 44th on the list of things I would think about that's somewhat similar is dishwashers. I think dishwashers are really important as well. All but one of my units has a dishwasher. Amazingly, I have a duplex on Winona Court that was built in 54 in southwest Denver. And one side has a dishwasher I put in years ago. The other side doesn't. But we're actually doing a remodel. For the first time in 19 years, I'm going to actually put a little bit of money into this place, and we're going to put a dishwasher in. And my tenant, who's been there for 4 years, is so excited. So I think that, you know, it's one of the things to consider if you literally had two different properties, one with washer and dryer hookup, one without. Sure, take the one with. You know, it's just one of many things to consider. And I would also think about dishwashers in today's market. You know, in anything except for maybe the lowest parts of town or a very, very expensive part of town where you have a 320, you know, square foot little tiny place, you're going to want a dishwasher as well.
And we were talking before we recorded this, I don't know if it was one of your properties, that one, known or a different one, but you were telling me how you just rented out a couple properties and how much the rents have increased the last couple of years. And I think one of them was at the property without the dishwasher, right?
Yeah, this is the Winona property. So this is the same duplex. So I just rented it last week to a new Section 8 tenant, and I was just looking back at my other previous rents, and I was getting $1,300 a month in May of 2014 for that unit, $1,300, and I just rented it for $1,850, which is a 42% increase, and that's Section 8 over Section 8. So it's, you know, there's not a lot of variable there. It's Section 8 in 1300, brand new tenant. Section 8 in 2018, brand new tenant, up 42%. So that is a pretty good piece of data to suggest that at least in this neighborhood in southwest Denver, for my type of property, rents are up 42%, which is exactly what we quote all the time. So it's nice to know that we're actually telling the truth.
And you were also telling me before that you were just doing a quick analysis of your entire portfolio, and your quick math is indicating that your vacancy for last number of years is below 1%?
Yeah, I actually do this occasionally. I went back 4 years and got it to within just a couple of days, one way or the other. And I think I'm at about 0.8% vacancy, like truly below 1%. So a question we try to answer all the time is, well, I'm a new investor. Should I manage myself? You know, should I get a property manager? And, of course, it depends on you and your situation and what you want to do with your time. I do actually manage my own properties, but one of the reasons I do is that it's a pretty good dollar per hour. I'm on top of it. I've got my team of people who do most of the on-the-ground work. As you know, Chris, I'm actually back east right now for 5 or 6 weeks. And, you know, I work from here, but I'm not on the ground. I've got a remodel going on, you know, and I like to be involved. That's just my personality is I want to be involved. But there is a payoff. And one of the payoffs is I'm not paying the 7 to 10% management fee. The other one is I know what's happening at every moment, all the time, and there's no mistakes, there's no money being wasted. And a big payoff is I'm on top of it. I work hard at this, and I have less than a 1% vacancy. And I think if I went back 20 years, even in the high vacancy eras, you know, I was probably at a 5 or 6% vacancy. So it's not that you, the listener, should do what I do. It's that you should consider what I do, consider what other people do, and then make the right decision for you. But there is a payoff to it.
And I brought that up, that point up, because, I mean, you're at below a 1% vacancy for your portfolio. So, I mean, kind of to the point, it's a great time to be a landlord because there's a lot more demand than supply out there. Renters can't be too picky, generally speaking. And don't get too caught up in data about washers and dryers being, you know, on the list, because as Charles said, it's 48th on his list to worry about. So pretty insignificant, but a very interesting piece of data. All right, Charles, so let's move on and actually talk about some deals for this month, because this is, I think, the most interesting part of our monthly roundup webinar, where we talk about one or two or three deals that has happened in the past few weeks. And I like to do this because I think it's the best way to keep your finger on the pulse of the market. And rather than us just teaching a PowerPoint presentation or going through topics, hey, let's go through and actually show what investors are doing in real time in the Denver market so you guys can see what's out there. So, Charles, I know the first property we're going to talk about is a duplex listing that you have. And I'll let you run through the numbers and kind of give us the background on this duplex.
So this is a duplex that a client of mine bought in 2010. It's 323 South Yost Street in Aurora, and it's a nice brick, two-bedroom, one bath on each side on the first floor, and a full basement, two-bedroom, one bath in the basement, and on a really nice street, just very tree-lined, you know, great location. She paid $124 in 2010, and what we did to try to come up with the price is what we always do. We try to look at comps and see if there are comps that have sold recently, similar comps, and sometimes we get lucky, but generally we don't. It's hard to find. And then from there, for a multi-unit, for a small multi-unit, we'll look at what the average cap rate for a duplex, triplex, fourplex for this type of property has been recently. So if the cap rate, the typical cap rate, which is the net income divided by the purchase price, is, say, 6.5%, then we would say, okay, what's her net income, and divide it by 0.065 and arrive at what we would think would be roughly a market price. So we came
and
in at
let me jump in here, Charles.
Yeah.
Sorry, how did you come up with the 6.5% cap rate?
So what I did is, and again, remember, like 60% art, 40% science. What I did is I look at other duplexes, triplexes, whatever, in the neighborhood, roughly in the neighborhood, and look at their numbers and say, what does it look like? And it's not like I can get to the 14th digit, but I know it's not a 4, and I know it's not an 8 cap, and I know it's kind of not a 7, and it's not a 5, and I'm arriving at what I think is a low 6 cap based upon comps, based upon what they're saying pro forma rents are, you know, my knowledge, my history of doing this, sold prices, what I think would be the average amount of expenses that would be put in annually, taxes, et cetera. So you can put, you know, some math into this, and what we get is into what looks like a low 6 cap rate range. And I think, you know, I felt pretty good about it. So we did the multiplier, came out at $525,000, and we got an offer a couple of days later, a little bit lower than that, but well within the range, and, you know, made us feel like, yeah, we did it about right. We came in just about market, just a little bit higher, had a great buyer, and we took it.
So let's jump into just how you calculated the net operating income, because a lot of times when we talk about deals, we're on the buy side, and so, you know, there's more assumptions than when you're on the sell side with the data. So can you run through just from the very first line, you know, from gross rents, and then walk people through what the numbers are like and what the net operating income is, and then what you came up with?
Sure. So the net income, of course, is all your income minus all your expenses, assuming you're not including the loan. It's just the income, pretending as if you owned it outright. So in this case, the potential rental income was $2,000 a month for each side, which comes out to $48,000 a year. And then we subtract vacancy from that, and we guess about 5% vacancy is the average. So that would be $2,400 we'd subtract. That would get you to the effective rental income of $45,600. And then from there, you actually add any additional income. Like, let's say, for example, you had, you know, washer-dryer, like corn-operated washer-dryers. You actually made a profit. Very rare, but, you know, if you do in this small stuff, you would add it. In this case, we don't. So we get what's called a gross operating income of $45,600. That's the pro forma based on our estimate, our guess of market rents of $45,600. And then from there, we just back out expenses. Property taxes, about $2,000. Property insurance, $1,300. She managed it herself, so that's up to the buyer to decide, but we have no property management. She had a few $100 in repairs, maintenance, that kind of stuff, and basically got us to that low 6 cap rate by using the pro forma market rents. And once again, it's always nice to see that you do all this sort of, you know, wallabaloo, you know, Shazam kind of stuff. You come up with a price, and then you sit back and wait and see what the market says. And the market said, yeah, we were just about right on.
Good. All right. Any other details about this property before we move on?
You know, it's very typical. It's a nice property in a decent part of town on a nice street that makes a solid long-term rental, you know, at about, I think it came in at about a 6.3 cap rate for the buyer. So it's just very unextraordinary. It was a nice little listing for us, and, you know, we're closing in a couple of weeks, and everything should be good. So maybe the the best thing I could say about this is, you know, so far so good. Pretty straightforward property. It's very, you can learn a lot about this property because it's relatively normal in today's market.
Great. Now, jumping on to the next deal we'll talk about, and this is actually someone we're helping to buy a house hack. And if you're not familiar with the term house hacking, it's where you as the investor buy the property using very favorable owner-occupied financing, live in the property at least for a year, and you can either rent out extra bedrooms, rent out, you know, the other unit, rent out the basement, or rent out the top floor. And then after a year or 2 or 3 years, you move out, keep as rental, and do the same thing again. So what are the details of this house hack that we're looking at, Charles?
So first off, just to talk about the client, it's a couple who actually live in a house hack right now. They live in the basement of a house. And, you know, we just love house hacking because when people ask us, you know, how do I get in to real estate with relatively little money down, can't put 20% down? Well, if you're willing to live with your tenants, you know, live, buy a condo, rent out a unit, rent out one side, you know, rent out one of the bedrooms, buy a duplex, rent out one side. In this case, buy a house, live in the basement. These folks have amassed a lot of wealth in a relatively short period of time by simply buying a house, living in the basement, and renting out the upstairs. It's been terrific. So they're going to do it again. They're going to now move and continue renting their current place, move into another one. And this is just a little house in the Aurora North area around 20th in the New England Heights. It's a five-bedroom, three-bath with three bedrooms up and two bedrooms and one bath downstairs. And they'll take the downstairs unit. Above grade, 1,700 square feet. Downstairs, 1,050. Just not fancy. But these people want to build wealth, and they can live with it, and it's phenomenal. The asking price was about $340. We got it for a little bit less than that, and it's in a, you know, a neighborhood that is just doing much better than it used to, if I can put it that way. We actually have the inspection today, so I can't give you any update on that. I will tell you, interestingly, it comes with a four-car detached garage. The seller is actually a colleague and even former client of mine, a guy named Lance. I didn't even know until I wrote the contract. I don't even think I knew then, come to think of it, because he had it in an LLC. I found out when the seller mentioned his name, and I said, oh, the listing agent mentioned his name. I'm like, oh, tell Lance hi, tell him it's Charles, you know, that sort of thing, and see if that would help at all. And fortunately, we did go under contract. But he actually has, he's renting the garage for $300 a month to a separate tenant who's just renting the four-car garage. So that's kind of cool. So we're going through the inspection today. The house, you know, seems to be in pretty good shape, some updating, but we'll find out after the inspection and go from there. But the numbers are they'll live, you know, they'll rent upstairs for a pretty, it's actually in pretty nice shape, hardwood floors and a lot of nice work done to it. And then they'll live in the basement. The basement has a relatively high, you know, almost 7-foot ceiling, probably nicer than when they are now. And because they're willing to make this sacrifice, they need to do this one or two more times. And truly, like, their retirement is somewhat set. And they're, I'm guessing, I don't know, Chris, you think he's in his early 30s, something like that, maybe mid-30s? Like, they're not old, but they're not young, but they're building
Yeah,
well.
I guess early 30s.
Yeah, so it's just a really nice thing to do if you're willing to live with a tenant, which not everybody is, totally understand, but wow, you can do great stuff for yourself if you are.
Yeah, and I mean, if you guys have not looked at the numbers into, you know, what house hacking investing can do for you, really sit down and do it, you know, Google it or come to one of our classes or listen to a past webinar. They are just absolutely phenomenal. And, I mean, I wish I understood this concept and was into real estate investing in my 20s because you do that a few times when you're, you know, especially if you got time on your side and the younger you are, the quicker you do it. As Charles just said, you can be set up for retirement fairly, very quickly and at a very young age. So it's a phenomenal way to build wealth and also build up a rental portfolio. So Charles, so I know the property is listed around $340,000, you said. And just to give some context here, if someone were to just buy the straight rental property and they come in, they buy it 20% down and they want to rent it out to tenants, any idea what type of rent, just market rent, it would bring in on a property like that?
Well, What I wouldn't recommend people do is rent it as a duplex because it's not a legal duplex. So it has a separate entrance. For our buyers, it works for them because they're the owners. They'll live downstairs, and there's a separate entrance. And believe me, lots of us and lots of other people have rented this type of property separately. But it's illegal, so it's something to consult an attorney about. If this was just rented to, like, one family who wanted a large area, put the kids downstairs with a second unit downstairs, I'm going to say this would rent in the range, it's a little odd, but 5-3, this kind of thing, I got to think 2,200, in the 2,200 range. What do you think, Chris?
I really don't. I haven't even looked at the property in detail yet, so I don't know. That's why I'm curious. That's why I'm asking you.
I'm going to guess something like that. It's been finished really nicely, and it would be like a large extended family, maybe the grandparents downstairs in their own unit. But I'm going to guess in that 2,200-ish range.
Yeah. And then plus, if they're bringing in a few $100 for the attached garage, maybe a few $100 more then, right?
Right. Yeah, they're getting $300 currently for the garage.
And so I don't know if you said this already. So I know the unit downstairs, so there's how many bedrooms, and there's like a kitchen or kitchenette down there? Can they completely be self-sufficient from separate from the top floor to the bottom floor?
Yeah, absolutely. It's over 1,000 square feet downstairs, two bedrooms, one bath, kitchen, separate entrance. It fits the bill for exactly what we like to do with our house hackers who will live in the downstairs. Had enough head height, already finished, full kitchen, separate entrance, checked all the boxes.
And I want to point out because, essentially, you said it's not a legal duplex, but essentially it's an up-down duplex. So something like this for people out there listening, because we always have people come into the website or talk to us, and their first instinct is to go out there and buy a duplex to house hack, because that's what pretty much any article on the internet that says, hey, buy a multifamily to house hack. And look, there's nothing wrong with it, but he just heard Charles talk about the duplex he listed for what, right around $525, and then this property right around $340. So I mean, we're talking what's it, $170,000 difference or so. So if you're looking at house hack, this is why we say don't just look at multi units, but also look at single family homes, ones that are like this, ones with attached dwelling units out back. I'm sorry, additional dwelling units out back, ADUs. Look at those as well, because from a total price standpoint, you can oftentimes get a better deal on properties that are not multifamily because simply the prices are cheaper. And plus on that, I mean, talk to a loan officer, but as you're getting a loan, there's different underwriting requirements for multifamily units and also single family homes. So a lot more gets the mix here. And we're not saying one's better than the other. We're just saying don't get completely focused on one type of property or one style of property, because there's lots of options out there. And my advice to you, whether you're a realtor or a client or you're a potential client of ours, is check out what's on the playing field out there, explore every type of property possible, and run the numbers and see what you would like to live into for a couple years as well. I mean, Charles, you got any final thoughts on this house hacking property or just the concept in general?
I think that's a really good start, and there's no substitute for going out and looking at properties. With this client, we went out a bunch of times. I'm guessing we looked at 20, 25 properties over time, something like that. They know what they wanted, and we actually started on the west side of town. That's where they thought they wanted to be, and we just couldn't find anything. We did find one property that would have worked great, but it was just a wreck. It was a disaster, and we gave them an inspection objection, and they said no, and that's the way it went, and we just got our earnest money back. This one is in the northeast part of town, and it was an okay part of town for them, but looking at properties, that's really what you want to do. There's a finite amount you can learn by reading and talking to people, and there is stuff you can learn, but if you're interested, let us know more, and go out with your real estate agent, come out with us, and go look at properties that could potentially make some sense for you. And they don't have to be older, 1940s in Aurora North. We've got folks buying nice three-bedroom townhomes and renting out two of the bedrooms to their buddies, things like that. So there are options.
Yeah, and there's just a whole spectrum of it, but that's why keep an open mind, sit down, look at properties, and then as Charles just said, get out there sooner rather than later, and go tour some properties to see what they're like. All right, so Charles, you've got a very interesting event coming up in a few weeks, and I realize it's going to be a recorded podcast, so it'll be outdated soon, but I think it's really cool, so I want to touch on it. I don't have the details in front of me, but I think it's Saturday, August 4th. You are doing a tour, or you're helping to host a tour, I should say, of investing in Pueblo, Colorado, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of interest outside of Denver simply because, of course, the prices have gotten high here, and Pueblo is a place to look at. So I'm working with ICOR, the investment community of the Rockies, and if you go to their website, is it ICOR.com, Chris?
I think so, and I'll put a link in the show notes to this direct event just because it's a long, ugly one. But, yeah, I'll put a link in the show notes so people can click on that.
Okay, so it's Investment Community of the Rockies, ICOR, and what they're going to do is they're actually getting a bus and do a full-day bus tour. So Tori Miller, who's running it for ICOR, asked me to lead it, and I said, you know, I'd love to, but the truth is I don't actually know much about Pueblo. I know about the Front Range. I know about investing. So what I did is I pulled in a couple of my agents at Your Castle Real Estate who actually own large multi-units in Pueblo, so know that market really, really well. So if you're interested, you want to go to ICOR. They are charging for it. You know, I think they get a bus together, and they may even have a lunch or something like that, and it'll be us going down and actually doing a full day looking at properties, talking to a couple of investors who invested there for years, and giving people an opportunity to maybe not go to Cleveland, but maybe go to Pueblo, maybe not go to Kansas City, maybe go to Pueblo, see if it makes sense. Or I think some of the people might say, yeah, I can see that I can get a better return in Pueblo. I don't want to be in Pueblo. I'm going to stay in Denver. The idea here always is look at properties. That's how you learn and understand it. I'm really, really looking forward to this Saturday, October 4th.
August 4th, right?
August 4th, sorry.
Yeah, just make sure we got the right month here. Yeah, so we'll put the link in there, and I think the registration was like $75 for members of ICOR, and I think it was $125 for non-members. So in my mind, that's a very reasonable fee for, you know, someone renting a bus and putting it all together, and you basically show up and you get to get a great tour. So that's definitely on my radar to look at because I know nothing about Pueblo from the investing side, so I'm looking at it and learning myself. So Charles, thank you for coming out this morning and recording this podcast with me. I greatly appreciate it, and you bring in lots of great value, so thank you. And everyone out there listening to the podcast, if you guys have follow-up questions about specifics on what we talked about, feel free to reach out to us. You can reach out to me or reach out to Charles. I'll put our contact details in the show notes or go to denverinvestmentrealestate.com. And if you want to discuss properties or look at properties or put together a game plan, whether you're looking to house hack or looking to, you know, buy and hold property, reach out to us as well. We love sitting down, grabbing a cup of coffee, and sitting down and talking real estate. So thank you, everyone. I appreciate you listening.